It is my pleasure and an honor to welcome Annika Rühl today. She is a master, a PhD student, master student. So I have a completed master thesis.
Und sie hat im November,
and in November, she won third place for women in IT, in the area digital and IT. Well, I would say clap, applause, applause, applause.
Und sie kommt heute mit einem ganz schön spannenden Talk an.
She is bringing us a really fascinating talk. Let's look into the entrails of a neural network. I'm very curious what's going to be dissected today. Thank you.
Well,
at the last Real Life Congress, I also attended, and I thought, oh, I could have a little talk, maybe for 20 people, that's going to be very cozy. I don't know what went wrong that there are that many people here right now. But, well, it's about to look into the inside of a neural network. I will start to explain how does a neural network even work. And you can see the little image with the brain, where you start usually. I explain how does a brain work, and then from that, how does a neural network work. So I have a master in computer science. I don't know how a brain works. I'm pretty sure most of you neither, so let's just skip that and start with how does a neural network work. That's the first part. My pointer would work here. This is the first part. There are three parts in total. What is a neural network? How do we deal with complex data? And in the end, we're looking inside. How does it look like?
So,
we pattern recognition is the basis of neural networks. We have always this case that we're seeing here. We have some data, we want to get some insight out of it, and in between there is such a model that is supposed to help us to get to the insight. That's pretty abstract, so let's make an example. Dogs and cats. Everybody knows in each program language, print hello world is the first you do, and with machine learning you want to train a model, the first thing is classifying dogs and cats. Let's do this classically. So we have some sort of data here. This data has been generated artificially, and we want to get the insight from that. Is it a dog or is it a cat?
Maybe I need to move a bit.
We want the insight, is it a cat or is it a dog? So we need a model for that. How could that model look like? Let's look inside. We see the data here. In this case, I took the height and weight, and out of habit I just used English words. I'm pretty sure you can deal with that. So we have height and weight of an animal, and the model tells me it's a cat or a dog. But now we don't really know what is this model supposed to do, actually. So we need like a line that we draw through that, where we can say everything that is to the left of the line is a cat and everything to the right is a dog. So we need a decision boundary that tells us we can classify on one side cat, on the other side dog. So how can we plot such a decision boundary mathematically? Depending on how long ago the school is for you, that formula is more or less known to you. Y equals AX plus B. I'll explain it. X is always that something we enter, like the height. A is the incline of this line, of the function. Is it more steep or is it more flat? And B is shifting the whole thing from between left and right. So with these parameters, so the parameters, I put all the important words in blue. We have the parameters A and B. They're really important because they show us where exactly is our curve our decision limit boundary.
Da das jetzt aber nicht so ist, y
since it's
würde uns jetzt das Gewicht vorhersagen und x
not
ist
a prediction of y being the weight and x is the only value we enter, we have height and weight, so we want to enter two input parameters. We're changing the function a bit, but it's basically the same. We multiply the parameter a1 with the height, a2 with the weight, add b, and in the end there is an animal. Of course, we don't have actually an animal as an output, but a number, and that number can be positive or negative, and I mapped that everything that is larger than zero is a dog, and everything that's smaller is a cat. Mathematically, of course, there is no weighting of positive and negative, no judgment. Yeah, I prefer dogs. Before the first people turn around and say, ah, way too much mathematics, let's draw. We don't write formulas, formulas are evil. So here is a visualization, a graph. Size and weight go into some nodes, and we multiply the parameters.
Und am Ende geht da ein Output wieder
we
raus.
Add a bias, and in the end, an
so
output goes out. And all of that in my little wobbly drawing.
Bitte schön.
Please.
Jetzt einmal irgendwie schön da unten.
Very
jetzt
nice.
Frage, okay, wir haben die Parameter
in
eins,
the bottom.
A2,
so we have the parameters
A1,
A2, and B. They show us where the line is exactly. They're really important. They need to be good. How do we get those? Do we know those? How does this line lie perfectly? Are we taking the decision boundary? Ah, no, wrong direction.
Ah.
Do we take this boundary or that boundary that is more steep? Or do we put it in a different direction? What are the perfect parameters for getting to the right green line? That means we have the goal, we want to find a model. Find a model that makes the least bad decisions. Let's reformulate that. We want to make the most good decisions, but actually in this area we always want the least amount of wrong or bad decisions. So our goal is to find parameters that the least bad decisions are made. Here we have glossary, so you can sort that well, essential terms from this area. What is learning? It's not me learning something with my little cards. Machine learning means find the fitting parameters A and B that match the task, that the task can be completed. And training is nothing else than this super complicated mathematical optimizing process in the background to find those parameters. Meaning, training is just, I train a neural network is a quick way of saying in the background a lot of complicated mathematics is happening that I do not want to understand, and that's stupid, and that's why I say training. This is the finished model. I trained this model, it's very simple, because it's just this linear model. In my not so very well endowed PC, it took like a minute. And here we see the parameters, 1.6 and 0.4 and minus 53 is what has been calculated. We can get an example here. We have an animal that is 25 centimeters high, 2.5 kilograms in weight. We multiply it with those numbers, add, and we get 41 if we're quick in the head. We subtract 53, minus 12, negative, meaning it's a cat. Yeah, that's too bad. If we had a chihuahua or a poodle or a small poodle or other small types of dogs, we can see in the data that we're going to be wrong a lot, because a lot of the blue points that are a dog are in the wrong half, in the cat half. That means our model has the least bad decisions, but that's still a lot of bad decisions. So this is a very essential problem. Careful, it's going to be a bit mathematical. Non-linear decision boundaries. We have here the very simple example. The points and the triangles are separated quite neatly. You can just draw a line and perfect. And I know everything to the left, the blue points, and everything to the right are the green triangles. In practice, usually it's more like this. You can't just draw a line and you have all the blue, and then we have a lot of blue points that are in the wrong area, and those are the little dogs that are classified as cats. We actually would prefer something like that, a weird and complicated, a much more complicated function.
Well,
how do we get there? Here we have our simple model, and now we want to make it more complex. Let's just add a few nodes. We add a node down there, then we have more multiplications on the side, it gets more complicated, but in the end we only have one result, cat or dog, positive or negative. It means we need another node in the end that unifies this to one single value. And now we have something more complicated. But we can escalate this and make it really, really complex. And we see we take a lot more nodes down to the bottom. We go more in depth. And maybe we can make something so cool. We don't connect all the nodes with each other, but just a few. With just a few, we're not just doing a multiplication, but something super awesome, like, I don't know. And then we have a neural network. Well, if you want, a very complicated function. So, about the terminology, what I called a node, that is one neuron, that's how it's called. Several neurons on top of each other, that would be a layer. And if we have several layers, one after the other, more than two usually, in depth, then it's called deep learning because we're getting deep. For historical reasons, we differentiate, but usually I have not found a neural network that wouldn't be deep, so that's it. That's the term. Well, all right. With that, let's get back to the pattern recognition. We know how a model could look like, a complicated function that's called a neural network. And if we have this complicated network, we might as well take complicated data. Before, we simply had cats and dogs and just weight and height. And now, we can take more complex data, for instance, an image. There's always the question, how do we get complex data into numbers? Because we know we just have a function, and we enter numbers, and in the end something comes out that we get as an insight from our results. Tada! We want an image and transform that into a number. For instance, that's this cat. And I don't know if that's a surprise for someone, but an image is made up of pixel as small as unit, and pixels are represented as numbers in the computer. We have a resolution, how many pixels are in there. So for the network, I'm going to train, it's 150 times 150. And if we are RGB and go with colors, which I did. We have three channels, the blue, the green, and the red pixels. And that means our neural network sees, or our computer. If you have this image, the computer has numbers already. It's a matrix with 150 times 150, between 0 and 255 times 3. That's what I mean by complex data. It's just numbers, but it's a lot of numbers compared to before, where we had only two. Now we have 150 times 150 times 3. That's a bit more. Let's get to the really interesting part. Well, now with all the language models, how do you transform a word into a number? We can take the very simple example. The first I had, which is H is the eighth letter in the alphabet. Let's count, put them one after the other. put letters into numbers. That's the point. But we transformed letters, characters into numbers and not words. We are losing the meaning that dog is a word,
and
the numbers aren't really a word. So that gets lost. That's not very smart. Second idea, let's code words. Let's take a dictionary, put all the words one after the other, and put a one behind the word that we want to code. We have very, very, very long lines of numbers with lots and lots of zeros, and on one point there is a one. That is a sensible idea, how you can put words into numbers. It's there, but it's a very, very long chain of words.
And
the projection is there, but it's not very smart. So there is something really cool, which is called embedding. I wish I could explain this to you, but that does not work in 30 minutes. Maybe somebody asks a question about that later. It's a very cool idea.
So
you have to live with me saying there is embedding, which is a very smart idea and actually quite simple. And in the end, we have dog transformed into a much shorter vector. If we look at the large vector to the left, where we had the whole dictionary, 10,000 words, and
10,000 Zeichen, Einträge, Worte.
No, not 10,000 entries. And now it's only 300 numbers long. So a lot shorter. And the cool thing about this is we can also capture the semantics, the meaning of a word with this a bit. So we can look at it this way. If we have apple, dog, pear, and cat, we actually, when I have these four terms, you would all say, well, apple and pear are more similar, and cat and dog are more similar to each other. And optimally, we want to have that projected in our vectors. And that's the reverse image of before. There I said we can plot images as numbers, and now we plot numbers as images. So the different numbers here, we can compare a bit better that pear and apple are a bit more close to each other than dog and cat.
And this brings us to the actual topic of my talk. We're going to look at the insides of a model. We have the data, and now we want to look what the inside of a model looks like. Let's stick with dogs and cats. Inputting images. Our model is one that I've trained, which means it's pretty small. This is rather simplified, but as an input, we've got our images 150 by 150 by 3, and this gets reduced to two values. And giving us the probability of it being a cat or a dog. And we can look at the insides of it, because I've trained it, and that's what it looks like.
That's
the parameters A1, A2, B from our previous example. The model I've trained has about 10 million of them, so it gets a bit hard to write down, or and even more difficult to turn into a graphic with a nice neat boundary. So what are we going to do with this?
Unsere berühmte Black Box.
It's our famous black box. There it is.
Was können wir damit jetzt anfangen?
What can we do with this? I'll give you an example. The minus 0.39. Where does that number come from?
Das wissen wir. Die ist einfach mathematisch entstanden.
We don't know. It's mathematical. You train the model, you optimize it, and at the end you get the model. You can calculate these by hand. I had to do it for my master's degree. It's no fun at all. It's no magic. We can calculate this number. But why is it there? How does it influence the decision? Is not something we can tell. We have no idea what this number is responsible for. Well, let's look at these numbers at the bottom. What does it recognize? Does it recognize in the nose of a dog, the eyes, the ears? What do these numbers do? And it gets worse. I couldn't even tell you with any certainty that my neural network has the concept of the nose of a dog. I don't know. I only know these numbers. But fortunately, there are lots of smart people who have thought about this in an own discipline of explainable artificial intelligence, where they take these data, these parameters that you have about a model, and ask themselves how they can make it explainable. Don't worry, I'm not going to go into detail about how these work, but it roughly works like this. We have this algorithm, this linear algorithm, and it simplifies my model. We need to simplify this model and make it more linear to make it more explainable. Then we have the weights of these parameters. Well, we can look at how these parameters are weighted, how much they influence the final a result, which is the second algorithm, and the third algorithm is a refinement of the second.
Die vor allem an einem bestimmten Layer sich anguckt. Also es ein bisschen, produziert ein bisschen schönere Bilder.
Mostly at certain layers, which produces slightly nicer images.
Also schauen wir uns das direkt mal an.
So let's look at these algorithms. We've got a cute little cat. It's the second reason why you tend to use dogs and cats. They give you cute pictures. This is what Lime produces, and that's also mainly what I would use to recognize a cat, mainly the face, maybe the paws. That's why it is recognized as a cat. If you look at the second one, you see these dots, which are the parts that were relevant to the neural network. It's different to what Lime said. This algorithm is called integrated gradients, by the way. It's a bit different to what Lime said. It's more in the stomach area that the decision is based on. And the third one, GradCam, outputs a heat map, which areas were relevant. And this is more towards the paws and fingers of the cat. So we've got three separate and very different explanations of how this neural network recognizes animals. Let's look at a second example, which is a cute little dog. Lime recognizes the face. The green part says that it's more dog-like. The red part says that it's more cat-like. If we look at integrated gradients, it says that the nose and the ears are relevant, but also a lot of the background, whatever that's got to do with the dog. And GradCam thinks just about everything seems to be relevant, also the fingertips, but also the ears and the nose. But it's interesting that the fingers of the human seem to be relevant for the neural network, because that's not what we as humans would do. And I, as a developer, can use explainer algorithms. I can use them to find out why. I can look at my training data and see that cats tend to be lifted up a lot more than dogs do, which means that cat pictures feature human fingers more often than dog pictures without those fingers, of course, having to do anything with the cat itself. But this disappears in the neural network. The literature calls this shortcuts, which means that the neural network finds certain shortcuts to reach its decision. This also happens with flocks of sheep or herds of sheep, which tend to look on rolling green hills.
Sieht ganz lustig aus.
So, aber wir können jetzt mal weiter den Fingern auf der Spur bleiben und einfach noch mehr
stick with the fingers and just throw in more cat pictures with human fingers.
Sind auch hier die Finger irgendwie ein relevantes Merkmal dafür? Wenn wir uns bei der oberen Katze Gradcam angucken,
if we look at the Gradcam output for the cat at the top, then yes, the heat map definitely extends to the knuckles of the fingers.
Bei Lime unten,
Lime
ist
at the bottom, it's a bit different. The ear seems to be a bit dog-like. The upper part of the face is cat, the lower part is cat, and the fingers are also in the cat area.
Bei der oberen, aber
the cat at the top is different. The hand is completely irrelevant, and the face of the cat seems to be more relevant. But I looked at why the arm and the background seems to be dog-like, and I can only explain it such that most dogs seem to be facing the camera sideways, which gives you a flat texture, which is not all that different to the arm that's also like long and thin and mostly flatly textured. And for the image at the bottom right, the bottom right area seems to be very relevant. It seems to be a super cat feature.
What would
a normal person do when seeing this? They would take this pixel at the bottom right and put it on top of a dog image and see what happens. We've got a nice little dog looking at the camera here. We throw it into the neural network. It says dog. We add this cat pixel, give it to the neural network, and now it says it's a cat. How nice. We tricked our neural network.
Yeah, genau, so sieht das dann über mit Gradcam aus. Also
that's what
ein bisschen Aufmerksamkeit geht unten auf
makes
den Katzenpixel, so die Beine von dem Hund.
It mostly focuses on the dogs of the on the legs of the dog.
Nicht toll, um es jetzt zu erklären. Das
it's not great for explaining it. It's
naja,
just the pixel at the bottom right.
But
it wasn't a particularly innovative idea. The literature calls this adversarial attack. We add some noise to the images to make it less readily apparent, and it mistakes a panda for a gibbon.
Ja, ich habe euch aber tatsächlich doch ein bisschen. Ich habe ein bisschen getrickst und zwar war es ganz so schlimm dann doch nicht, wie ich gerade gesagt habe.
It wasn't quite as bad as I told you. If you look at the explanation,
ist das jetzt nicht eindeutig, dass es nur an diesem Katzenpixel lag. Ich habe auch ein bisschen gesucht, bis ich ein Hundebild gefunden habe, bei dem das funktioniert.
It doesn't seem to look entirely like exclusively at the cat pixel. I had to try several images of a dog to get this to work. But I wanted to understand why these explanations are also different. And the explanation is probably that the neural network that I've trained isn't particularly good. It's not very good. It's not very large. My computer isn't very good. So I wanted to use a pre-trained network, a large pre-trained network as an example. It's very common to use pre-trained networks because training a network is really takes a lot of resources. I added my own classifier layers to get this to tell cats from dogs. I had to use a Google computer to do that with powerful hardware to do this because my computer couldn't cope with it. And if you look at the output and the explanations from these networks, what you see now is the output from a small network, from my own network. If you look at the bigger network, then it's what you would expect, the nose, the face of the dogs, and you can't trick it with this cat pixel. It ignores human fingers, so a larger network would actually help in this case, but it takes a lot more time. And this brings me to the end. I gave you a few
zum einen möchte ich gerne sagen, ein neuronales Netz ist kein Gehirn, sondern tatsächlich ein
so neural network is not a brain, but it's actually just math.
Es ist sehr wenig Magie hinten.
It's actually
sehr, sehr, sehr viel Mathe.
Well, mostly math, less magic.
Dann der zweite Punkt.
Second point.
Man kann schon in der
so we can look inside, but it's pretty futile most of the times, because we cannot really interpret what's inside.
Aber wir gibt, es gibt Algorithmen, die das Ganze
however, there are algorithms that make it more explainable. So as a developer, right, so that we can kind of see if what we're doing is, well, kind of reasonable or not. We can easily transform and translate images and words into numbers and pass them to our models. This is actually quite important, the encoding of words, because we can, in the end, tell how good our model is or not. And in the end, we can actually trick these neural networks if we perform those adversarial attacks to kind of understand, first we have to understand how the pattern recognition works, and then we can kind of try to attack and trick it. And in that case, we can improve the rigidity of our neural networks. Thank you very much.
Ja, also so wie ihr geklatscht habt, das Internet hat auch schon Feedback gegeben, da gibt's zwar keine Frage,
so,
aber ganz viel explizit.
Even the Internet has given a lot of praise for this talk.
Wir fangen deshalb hier im Saal an.
But we start the question at mic one. So thank you for the excellent talk. It was very nice.
Got a question. Warum werden nicht vorausgewählte Features genommen?
So why don't we use pre-selected features?
Daten? Gesagt wird zum Beispiel
to
landmark ratios von
interpret
Hunden, Katzen,
certain types of data. So, for instance, why don't we use predefined human recognized features over pixel features for cats versus dogs? So, actually, I was asking myself the same question. So, when we have these concepts, right? So, to understand and decide cats and dogs, we could use those ideas to infuse them into a neural network and improve it. I cannot really say if it is there in literature, but I can imagine that it is possible. However, I'm not sure how straightforward it is. So in my research, we are working with big data, like tens and thousands of features.
Man kann dieses PCA bedeutet jetzt einfach
so there is a method called PCA, principal component analysis, that we can use to reduce the well, to reduce the higher dimensions of a feature space or like a data space into smaller dimensions to give us an understanding and some ideas of how our data is actually behaving. So you can, for instance, do this on the MNIST dataset with numbers from 0 to 9. Micro 2. The embedding. Now we have the embedding question. Thank you a lot. So, mayhaps I do have another slide. Just have to see if I actually brought it. Ah, yes, here it is. So how do we transform words into numbers? So we have the idea, we have the data. So we have quite... Okay, first of all, what are similar words? So that are words that are used in similar contexts. So the context for a dog would be to pet or to play, but cat would be like mostly petting. However, an apple you wouldn't really put into context with petting, right? So given a vector containing dog, we demand that our output is any vector that kind of portrays this context that we also imply for dogs. So we have a ginormous input that we then compress down to a smaller space. So we go from 10,000 entries to a Latin space with only 300 nodes in the center. And we will just take the vector in the middle, which is only 300 entries long. So reduce it from about 10,000 entries to only 300.
Von den Vektoren ungefähr zeigen, die dann ähnlich zueinander sind. Und da kann man da drauf ganz lustig rechnen. Also man kann das Standardbeispiel.
We can do this for well any words literally, and we can even do fancy math with it. So if we have a king, for instance, king and queen, we can take the king. And maybe add woman to it, and then see if the answer would be queen. Microphone one, thank you. So I've heard a lot that AI is mostly neural networks. And the question is ChatGPT basically based on that structure? Or is it more complex? So yes, fundamentally they are pretty much the same, but there are a lot of novel ideas and it's way more complex than what I've shown you. In rough shapes, yes, but they are, well, the basic idea is the same. So we have an input, some mathematical magic in the center and some output that we want to.
Dann Mikro zwei, bitte.
Microphone two again.
Hallo, danke für den Vortrag.
Hey, thanks for the talk.
In den Output Layer quasi so plus 100 Hund reinstecken und auf
can
Input
we
Layer kommt dann quasi ein Bild raus, wie ich das Modell ein plus
100 Dog into the Output Layer and then look at the Input Layer and see if it's like a cat or a dog or vice versa. Can we like reverse the entire system?
Ich sage jetzt nichts Falsches.
Yeah, in principle yes.
Ich meine, man kann es auf alle Fälle
so
visualisieren.
Yeah, we can visualize it. How that will look.
Es müsste es dazu geben. Ich bitte nagel mich nicht drauf fest. Ich kann es dir jetzt
please
nicht
please don't keep me that.
Paper auf das beschrieben hat, aber ich meine sowas in die Richtung müsste es geben, dass man es kann.
Even though I don't have an example by heart, I'm pretty sure there is one. Another one.
This wird ein Tesla jetzt auch nach demselben Schema.
So autonomous driving, is it basically the same concept? So if Tesla's cars are driving on their own, is it like still based on the same concept?
Also es gibt, ich habe euch jetzt nur gezeigt, wie supervised training.
So I've only shown you how supervised training works. In image recognition, we usually do supervised learning, so we know what will be the output. And we can tell the system or the model if it's correct or incorrect what it predicted.
Yeah.
So in image recognition, it's usually supervised training. And then there is a last question. So about your master thesis.
Repariert. Also jetzt, ich finde gerade durch diese tolle Einführung,
so your thesis was about repairing neurals, neural networks.
An den Daten wirst du ja nichts editieren.
Genau, sondern da war genau die Idee, wir könnten.
So the idea in my thesis was that if there is a shortcut or if we can trick it using one of those adversarial attacks,
wo keine Hände drin sind und hoffen, es verlernt das Ganze irgendwann.
We can try to correct or fix or like tweak the model in that sense, that we, for instance, use a lot of images that lack hands to kind of make it learn or make it like forget that a cat is associated with hands in order to not like to circumvent the need for entire retraining. And the verdict is that it doesn't really apply to larger things, but for smaller systems, yes, we can repair them. So, there is a shout-out, there was a shout-out on a scale of 0 to 7, and now we want to have a big thanks for this talk. And now, raise it, give it up! Thanks for listening to the English translation of this talk.